Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, December 6th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've used to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to help me turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file download. Download it, copy it, use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because that brings them, usually brings more comments, questions, testimonials, and we'd be happy to hear those. Give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. That'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and today is the 340th day of the year, but I would like to back up to the 338th day, which was Saturday, because that lesson is near and dear to my heart and the core of these teachings. The lesson simply reads, I am affected only by my thoughts. And the commentary reads, It needs but this to let salvation come to all the world. For in this single thought is everyone released at last from fear. Now have we learned that no one frightens us and nothing can endanger us. We have no enemies and we are safe in all external things. Our thoughts can frighten us, but since these thoughts belong to us alone, we have the power to change them and exchange each fear for a happy thought of love. We are the ones who have crucified ourselves. Yet creation has planned that its creation shall be redeemed. Your plan is sure. It's only ours, only yours. All other plans will fail. And we have thoughts that will frighten us until we learn that we have given them the only thought that leads to salvation. That is the thought of our true nature as love. So that was from a couple days ago, and today's lesson simply reads, I can be free of suffering today. Creator, I thank you for today and for the freedom I am certain it will bring. This day is holy, for today your offspring will be redeemed. Our suffering is done. We will hear your voice for directing us to find Christ's vision through forgiveness. And again, in this work, forgiveness means the dismantling of fear and the dismantling of distorted perceptions of what is not true. Be glad today, be glad. There is no room for anything but joy and thanks today. Our Creator has created us in its likeness and image, and we are truly made of love, and can extend that love in each new present moment. It's a choice. So the Course in Miracles experiment lesson from Pam Grout, lesson 340, simply reads, it's titled, Me Too, you know, hashtag Me Too, escaping the abusive relationship of my ego and its henchmen. She quotes John O'Donohue, the famous poet, as saying, your story doesn't hold a candle to who you really are. And Pam writes, I've heard all the stories, Weinstein, CK, yada, yada, and here's what I know. There's not a misogynist alive that's half as bad as the abuser in my brain. Perhaps you know him. The voice that tells me everything and everybody else that's living and breathing that something is wrong, that something needs to be fixed. A Course in Miracles calls this voice the ego. It is the opposite of love, and it shows up as fear. It's a big fat liar, and pardon my French, but it's full of caca. It runs on three main themes. Do something, you're screwed, and run. It shoves us away from what we've been put on this earth to do, to love, to connect, to create ridiculously beautiful things. In lesson 340, I can be free of suffering today. It tells me there's a much more compelling voice, one that knows how to be free. So let's celebrate today and be glad and know there is no room for anything but joy and thanks today. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and our Course in Miracles experiment commentary. And as usual, we have time for conversation. I've had a number of things come to my attention to share for today. And I'll start with this idea. It seems like the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Vivek Murthy, M-U-R-T-H-Y, has been either talking to people who've read The Course in Miracles or has read The Course in Miracles. And Dr. Murthy was being interviewed along with groundbreaking neuroscientist Richard Davidson by Krista Tippett last week. And that was an interview that I listened to yesterday. And here's the intro. The intro written by Krista Tippett is, what if the future of well-being is about, quote, tipping the scales in the world away from fear and toward love, close quotes. And what if it's a Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Vivek Murthy, who talks this way? You heard that right. The Surgeon General of the United States has said the future of well-being is about tipping the scales in the world away from fear and toward love. And in the interview, Krista draws him out, along with this groundbreaking neuroscientist and friend of his, Richard Davidson. And they carry deep intelligence and vision from the realms of science and public health, expansively understood. They explore all we're learning to help us move forward as a species. This Zuma's event was sponsored by the Center for Healthy Minds. And if you go to the Center for Healthy Minds, .org, then you get a whole bunch of resources. The primary thing on the website says, new research grant hopes to improve the well-being of healthcare professionals. And the Center for Healthy Minds is run through the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And they've got a COVID-19 well-being toolkit and resources available for free. And they've got all kinds of micro techniques that we can use to restore our well-being, to build our well-being, to move away from stress. They talk about some of those in the interview. You can find the full interview at onbeing.org, onbeing.org. And I encourage you to give it a listen. I encourage you to take heart when you hear things like, the Surgeon General of the United States is saying the future of well-being is going to be amplified by moving away from fear and toward love. So, how about that for a note of hope? A note of hope. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1. We can have a conversation. What's on your mind for today? How would it serve you to discuss what I just read or anything else we've talked about in the almost 11 years on this show? The other thing I was going to share is the Pema Chodron book, a part of it that talks about the five strengths in Buddhism from Pema Chodron's work. And it's interesting because this, to really understand Buddhism for me has been like learning a different language. Even when they're just using English words. So instead of, I'm not talking about, you know, figuring out what bodhisattva means or what Mahayana means. I'm talking about when they say, here are the five strengths in English. Strong determination, familiarization, the seed of virtue, reproach, and aspiration. So if I think about those words in English and the associations of meaning that I have for them, I would probably think for 100 years and not come across the explanation that Pema Chodron gives in her book. I think the title of the book is Start Where You Are. And yet, they're very useful, and I can see how they really flesh out the concepts that are so similar to the work we're doing here on Mindshifters Radio and our Mindshifter support groups. Yeah, the title of Pema's book is Start Where You Are. And if you just, you know, do a search for Pema Chodron, the five truths, or the five strengths, not truths, the five strengths, then you can find this, you know, this PDF of the list of them and then some descriptions. And in the book, she's talking about a series of slogans, and each slogan carries a deep teaching. And so, you know, in this chapter, she's talking about how when you learn how to live, you learn how to die. There's nothing doom and gloom about it. It's just life. So strong determination, number one, this is the first of five strengths, and it's connected to taking a very strong stand. It's not about I'm right and everybody else is wrong. The strong stand is represented by the quote, I will maintain my basic egolessness, my basic sanity, even in my death. So that's the first strength. The strength to understand that I can survive and even thrive when I watch ego and I'm not driven by ego, when I allow ego to run its course and not drag me around. This is, you know, these teachings are not about destroying the ego or attacking the ego. These teachings understand that there is a purpose to everything that is part of our existence. And understanding the purpose of ego, putting it in proper perspective, is critically important to our mental and emotional and physical health. When I read this and was listening to the discussion from her book about the egolessness, I remembered how one time when I went to the Michael Rice's intensive center down in very, very southern Missouri, almost Arkansas, when I was down there, I was so overwhelmed. And just the first night, at late evening and night that I was there, I was just amazed at how many people were bragging about how small their ego was. And I woke up the next morning with this, I don't know, what do you call it, a dream, a vision, a scenario in my head in which, in the dream, we were gathered in the main building at Heartland. It's called the Heart Center. It's where most of the classes are taught and where the meals are served and prepared, etc. And we were in that meeting waiting for a class to start, and we heard this horrible noise coming from another building next door. And Jeannie was, and this is in my dream, Jeannie was there trying to calm everybody down and saying, oh, don't worry about it. And as she's talking, you know, things are being thrown through the windows. It's like an all-out brawl is going on in this building adjacent to the Heart Center. And so I spoke up and I asked, I said, what's going on over there? Do they need help? And Jeannie says, oh, no, not at all. They got one of those new machines that measures ego, and they're just having a discussion about whose ego is smaller. I loved that dream. And so as I'm listening to Pema Chodron talk about ego, it's not about destroying ego. It's about understanding the process of ego. It's about understanding what Guy Finley would call a mechanical level of mind. It has a sense of, it has a purpose in our lives. And yet, if we identify with it, if we elevate it to the level of master, we create more pain and suffering in our lives exponentially than if we understand it for what it is and use it appropriately as a tool. So this first strength, the first of five strengths, is strong determination, stated as, I will maintain my basic egolessness. This doesn't say I'm going to go out and knock other people down out of their ego state. This is, I will keep the focus internal, and I will work to maintain my basic egolessness state, my basic sanity, and I will do this even in my death. So that's quite a tall order for those of us who live in a culture that has been conditioning us to identify with ego and to argue and fight and be the victor in most competitions. And everything's about competition. So the second strength is familiarization. And this is developing a general sense of mindfulness and awareness so that we don't panic when we're dying, either when we're dying to ego or when we're noticing that the physical body is functioning in a way that is not as vigorous and vivacious as it used to be. Getting really, really familiar with oneself and one's internal process. This is about acknowledging that there's a lot to learn about me and my mental gymnastics and how much I've identified with them over the years. There's a lot to be said for self-knowledge, Guy Finley likes to say. There's no such thing as bad self-knowledge. Many of us run from introspection, being alone, spending true quiet time. Many of us use the drug of busyness and distraction endlessly, as though spending time alone would be the death of us. And so understanding that familiarization, becoming familiar with the workings of my own mind, is the only way to truly live. And as they talk about in this work, when I learn how to live, I learn how to die. That living from that mindful state is the only way to truly live. The third strength is called the seed of virtue. And this is connected with not resisting, not taking any kind of break from your fear of death. Yeah, I'm going to have some fear come up. I'm going to have fear come up when I just think about releasing my attachment to ego. Why? Because I've been conditioned that that's my true self. So I'm going to have fear come up about losing my true self, dying, if you will. This seed of virtue, seed, S-E-E-D, of virtue, has to do with overcoming your attachment to your belongings. You know, when they ask people to, you know, be their mentor in the Buddhist tradition, they form this relationship, and it begins with the student giving the master a gift. And what they call for is a gift that is of something that you truly, it's just enough that you don't really want to give it. If it's money, it's a little bit more than you're comfortable giving. If it's one of your prized possessions, it's one you really don't want to be without. And that's the beginning of the path. The beginning, because it's understood that the more I'm attached to physical belongings, the less I am actually in the process of learning who I am. The less possibility there is for me to truly understand my nature and the nature of the beings of brilliance and light that I share this journey with. The fourth strength is called reproach. And this means realizing that the so-called ego doesn't really exist. It's just a collection of thoughts. Therefore, you can say, what am I afraid of anyway? Go away, ego. Come, ego. It doesn't matter. I am not attached to you because you're just a pattern of thoughts. And so I learn to see very clearly that I am not my thoughts and they are not me. I learn to identify fully with the present moment living and observation. And only in that way do I learn more about who I really am. There are some deep spiritual teachings where the master, the teacher, all he or she does is continually ask the student, who are you? Who is it that's listening? Who is it that's answering? Who are you? Over and over and over again. So the reproach means understanding that I am not my thoughts about myself. I am not the ego, and the ego only exists as a collection of thoughts about me. It's not a separate entity. And the last of the five strengths is aspiration. It's realizing that you have tremendous strength and desire to continue to open yourself up. Be wide open, as Dale Ellen Hoffman would call us to be. Therefore, you have nothing to regret when you die. You've already accomplished everything that you can accomplish. And the only way to accomplish everything you can accomplish is to be wide open. And again, this is where it's like, for me, it's like learning a new language. What does that mean, wide open? What's the essence of the message that's being conveyed here when they say be wide open? I didn't have that taught to me as I was growing up. I know about open windows and open doors. I don't have any idea what it means to be wide open mentally, emotionally, spiritually, personally. So for me, it's like learning a whole new language to learn about these teachings. In much the same way, it's like learning a whole new language when I go to read the reality management worksheet and understand what the concept of sustained incoherence is from David Bohm's work as it's contained in the reality management worksheet. Like it's like learning a whole new language to learn about what is meant by the phrase Ruka Dukuja. What really happens inside me mentally and emotionally when I choose to cancel a goal? Before I encountered this work, I didn't have any goal canceling teachings. I was only taught to do two things with goals my entire life, set them and achieve them. And it was a whole new set of learning for me to understand that there's a way to have a four or five different skills that my mind can do in relation to goals. I can frame a goal before setting it. I can set a goal for attention throughout the day. I can set a goal, or I can select a goal for a sustained attention throughout the day. Then I can set a goal. I can achieve a goal. And perhaps most importantly for this work, I can actually cancel a goal consciously. And an entire powerful dynamic occurs within my mind when I do that. It's a concept radically different than anything I had ever been introduced to prior to this work. And it's the core of what makes this set of tools so powerful and productive. And yet, when I first talk about it, I don't even understand the meaning of it or the power of what can happen if I actually apply it. And the first few times I do it, I've got no concept of how dynamically that process can change my life for the better. So it's like learning a new language, and then it's like practicing a skill that I didn't even know existed. And then as I build that skill, and my mind starts to function in different ways, the more I practice the skill, the more I see the benefits and challenges. There are challenges to this work. There are challenges to my sense of who I am and challenges to my conditioned way of thinking. And I can just tell you from personal experience that it's worth the challenge. Personally, it has been positively life-changing over and over and over again to learn about these tools and apply them in my life. So there's our extended introduction. We've got about 25 minutes left. Time for a comment or a question. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? How can I support you today? What was good about your weekend or challenging about your weekend that you would like to share with us? 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. I wanted to make sure that I mentioned the Center for Healthy Minds, because as I mentioned, they talk about it somewhat in the interview with Krista Tippett, but they have what Krista was so happy about. They have micro practices for well-being, little things you can do. One of them that the neurosurgeon was talking about is he looks at his schedule in the morning after his meditation or whatever, his morning routine, And he looks at his schedule and just takes a moment or two, a minute or so, to think about every person he's going to be interacting with as he goes through his itinerary for the day, and send them blessings. Think about them as people and bless them, much like, you know, my interpretation of it is very much like the gentle art of blessing that we were introduced to from Pierre Pratervand. And the website has a Healthy Minds program, an app that you can put on your phone, and a bunch of little things like the choosing appreciation, like Richard Davidson talks about, as he looks at his calendar and sees a list of people he's going to have appointments with or meetings with, he thinks about the individual people and just has appreciation for each person. As I said, when I listened to it, my mind went to the gentle art of blessing practice as outlined by Pierre Pratervand from the book Gentle Art of Blessing and from the interview we did here on Mind Shifters Radio, which is available absolutely free in the archives of the show, but also on the mindshiftersacademy.org website under the, I think I called it Best of Audio tab. And currently there are only 6 files there, so it's easy to navigate. And the 6th of 6 files there, the last one listed is the interview with Pierre Pratervand. So, we still have time for a comment or question. How can we support you today? 563-999-3581. The last resource we were talking about is the Center and to find that it's centerhealthyminds.org. So there's no word for in the web address. centerhealthyminds.org. And if you click on the well-being toolkit and resources and scroll down, you can actually see that there's an Android app. I think it works for both Apple and Android. And all kinds of well-being tools listed in that website for free. Their idea is to really give people resources, much like the very practical tools that Michael and Jeannie offer, to help people actively, proactively improve their well-being. And they say on the website, we take the best of learnings from neuroscience, contemplative traditions, and skill-based learning and put it in easy-to-use packages to support the well-being of everyone. You can do this for yourself or you can bring it to your office. Whichever the form, everything starts with the proprietary framework of the 4 pillars of health and a healthy mind: awareness, connection, insight, and purpose. And they talk about those 4 when they're doing the interview with Krista Tippett. And one of the parts of the interview that was really good for me is that instead of just talking about connection, Mr. Davidson is talking about appreciation, gratitude, affection, etc. So it's the quality of connection. It's a loving, cherishing, appreciating, a wide open connection. It's not just being in the same vicinity as somebody. It's not being in a situation where everybody's on their iPhones next to each other. It's actually being awake and aware and tuned in and connected in a way that is full of appreciation, gratitude, understanding. So area code 513, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hello, Dr. Tim. This is Urate.
Hello. Hello, Urate. How are you today?
I thought I'll check in a little bit after my big work that I got done almost a week ago. So when you ask, I would say the energy is definitely moving. I contemplated my letter, responsibility letter, to Tom's daughter, and I send it out. I have not heard anything, but I'm feeling peaceful. So it was for me, and I just trust that everything's gonna, resolve in the ways that are most best for everyone. But I feel like when I agreed to say that, I'm accepting all the healing that might come with it, and I didn't mean that I'm going to start downloading COVID in my body. So I guess that was part of it.
Oh, are you saying that you have COVID?
Right.
Symptoms? Okay.
Right. And I was like, it's really interesting because the whole situation was pretty much about that, right? So we were resolving those different way of seeing with Tom's daughter and misperceptions and misinterpretations, so interestingly enough, that I am like, trying to integrate this as easily as I am integrating the whole change after I send the letter and I did the worksheets. So yeah, I feel like I'm upgrading my system. I'm shedding some unnecessarily things and visualizing that this virus is really like eliminating all the debris within me at the physical, emotional, spiritual, mental level, that anything that I don't need, so I could upgrade myself.
Well, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. I feel like I'm building natural antibodies. I am definitely practicing lots of self-care, and I'm doing really good. I hope it stays like that. And, working with that and visualizing and trusting that my thoughts of it has the most power of everything. So trying to create what I want with this whole situation.
Well, I know that that is what lots of people listening will be sending your way in terms of loving thoughts and blessings for that to happen. And we know that, when you've got the Surgeon General of the United States and one of his best friends talking about the need for waking up to the fact that wellness, what's going to take us to the next level of wellness, is moving away from fear and towards love, there's a real power in that. It's a real power that's actually been, there are, the hard science research is validating what the spiritual teachers have known for thousands of years.
True.
So congratulations on your willingness to do that work, and I'll hold the space that it's a loving resolution with your Tom's
you.
Daughter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was really helpful. I just wanted to thank for the group, you know, and for everybody in the group holding the space for me, and for the guidance. It was profound work. I was ready, and yeah, I moved the energy. I felt very motivated. I had a very powerful dream, like right before I contemplated the letter, and because I did the work, and then I contemplated the letter on Thursday, and then on Friday I came up with the symptoms, but I had a dream of me playing with Tom's daughter and her two granddaughters, and we were all just happily playing there, and I'm ready to leave, and there's in the back of my mind of like, oh, there is something unresolved, there is still unresolved energy between us. So I kind of felt this a little unease that I know that I didn't feel when I was playing with them. And her husband gave me this big hug, and then he whispered in my ear and says, Urate, you guys have to resolve this with Tess, you know? You have to do this. And so when I woke up, I just like, okay, this is a good motivation to sit and do the writing. So when I sended the letter, I meditated prior. I asked to be, you know, centered from love and knowing that I don't have expectations like for anything or anyone to change or this letter make a difference. I'm just sharing where I am. And yeah, suddenly this deep peace landed in my being, which felt really good.
Great.
And I'm there. Yeah.
And what? I didn't hear that last part.
And I said, I'm still there, you know. It's like that is still there. I just trust, you know. And now it is easier for me to really, like, have compassion for their process, whatever that is, for her process. And to accept that, you know, all I can do, you know, I cannot do anything for others. I can just do my own work and trust that everybody else will do their own in their own times, or they won't do it. And I have to be okay with either one.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
That's the essence of the power struggle model that says I create my power struggles when I focus more of my attention on things I don't have any control over and less
exactly.
of my attention on the things that I actually can control.
Yeah.
And literally the shift of my attention away from things that I don't have any control over is, you know, the path to liberty and being more open and going with the flow. And then it gives me the space to focus my attention on the things I actually do have some control over and then use them in the most productive and loving way I can to improve my experience of life in the moment.
Indeed. And I think that's what the Tuesday group was really helpful for me. Is it helped me to shift from, you know, okay, I feel powerless because it's all in their hands, to really like take the power back and do my focus towards me and how I feel about that situation and doing work around my feelings. That's what it brought the peace part. And like
Great.
It shifted the focus from how can I fix them to like, oh, it's really about me here, you know, like, so I should be grabbing my gift versus worrying how to change them.
Wonderful. Well, that's the essence. And if people look at it that way, if the people can put the filter on it, every tool that Michael and Jeannie offer is a tool I apply to myself, not to others. If I think somebody else is out of line, I apply the tool to my perception of that and then actively work to remove anything that's not loving that arises in my perception, and that's how my life gets better.
Well, I'm a life testimony.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for the call. Anything else we can do to support you today?
No, I think I'm good. I'm doing great. So I just wanted to share that, where I am and my story. So I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your sharing it. And I just had the thought that you might want to share the letter with, I don't know what your actual content of the letter is, but if it's worded, you know, well and it's depersonalized so you're not outing or identifying somebody else, it might be a letter that Jeannie would want to make available as a template for people if it's been that useful for you.
Of course. And I'll reach out to Jeannie.
Wonderful.
Yeah, good idea. All right. Well, thank
you
so much.
All right, be gentle with yourself. Heal well and quickly, and we'll talk to you again before too long.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Blessings.
So we have about 8 minutes left, 563-999-3581. The tool Urate was talking about is the Responsibility Communication Tool. It's another tool that's available absolutely free on whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. When you get to that next page, just keep scrolling down, and you will find the Responsibility Communication Tool. I believe the way they have them listed these days is the rules, Responsibility Communication Rules. And they were revised in 2018. And there are three examples of responsibility communication letters that were written in alignment with those tools that you can download and read. So there's the actual worksheet itself that you can download, and there are the three examples. Maybe if Urate wants to share hers and Jeannie thinks it's in alignment, maybe there'll be four. But the purpose of that is for me to learn to step myself through using these, the first six rules or statements or guidelines or questions, and really get clear for myself about what I'm doing with my thoughts, with my perception, that's causing my pain, fear, sadness, upset, whatever the negative emotion is. And you know, for me, that tool is mostly for myself. Most of the time when I write those responsibility communication letters, I don't send them to the other person because that wasn't the point. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I'm not trying to change anybody else. I'm trying to get very clear about what I'm doing with my thought process that's creating the pain or fear or sadness or any other negative emotion that I'm experiencing, and that my mind is busy trying to tell me was caused by somebody else. So sometimes when people do that, they then go ahead and communicate it to another person. If they've got enough of a relationship, if it's a valuable enough relationship, if there's a basis for communication in that relationship to begin with, then people might go ahead and send the responsibility communication to the person that they've been interacting with, where they feel they've got some kind of a disconnect in their communication or relationship. And that's what Urate did. And as she said, it's not about getting a certain response from the other person. It was about Urate getting very clear with herself and feeling completely congruent with what she's doing in her own internal processing and how she's communicated with the other person. And if I do that, my job's done. And if the other person wants to meet me and clear up misunderstandings or misperceptions in the relationship and get closer, I've put out that invitation. I can't make them take advantage of it. I can't make them accept the invitation, but I've done my part. And so, as I mentioned, it's just another tool that's available on whyagain.org. And thank you, Urate, for the testimonial that it was useful and for mentioning the support groups. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursday nights. It's available through Zoom. It is a very, I find it to be a very respectful, loving community, and a lot of good work gets done there. It's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, most every Tuesday and Thursday, barring there being a holiday. And I think we've even had one in the past 17 years of our Tuesday night meetings, we've had one meeting that didn't happen simply because of technical difficulties since we've gone to the full Zoom format since coronavirus restrictions have taken place. And so if you or someone you know might want to take advantage of that, please go to the website at mindshiftersacademy.org. And or pass that information along to somebody that you know might want to benefit from it. And join us Tuesdays and Thursday nights from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. So that's our first hour show for today. We've got another hour coming up with Michael and Jeannie. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. TM. Appreciate you.
Hope you had a lovely weekend and a great show.
Thank you, I did. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, December the 6th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and we do have a caller who is supposed to call in a little bit later. I don't see his number on the switchboard yet. So we'll be going to him as soon as he dials in. I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain, whyagain.org, and click either the Start Here button or scroll down, hit the bullseye. They both take you to where you'll find all the tools, and it's a good place to start. And you can actually go all over the website. It's a tremendous amount of pages out there now. If you run into anything that's not working right, please give me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know if there's anything that's not working or a link that's not working, and we're still working out a few bugs since we switched over to a different format for the website. I think it's going really well. If you haven't updated your app on your phone, the Google app has been put up. There is going to be one more change to the Dragon Klingon game, but the update to the app is in the Google Play Store. It's free, and it should just update automatically, but if it doesn't, go out and click update. The iPhone we're still working on. We don't have it complete as yet. So stay on the lookout for all of that. We're excited about all the changes that are on it. We now have the ability for you to ask questions. If you're doing the worksheets on the app and something pops up, from every page in the app, you can click on the little button that says ask a question and drop me a line. Ask your question. We are here to support you 5 days a week, and we want to participate with you. It's, you know, it seems like we have been hitting a lot of monologues, and the show is about supporting you, and we need to know what you need support in, what areas you want to cover, what questions you have. And so Michael should be getting in just any second now. And all you have to do if you're on the show and you're listening is you press 1, the little hand goes up, and we know that you want to talk. And I see Yurate's hand up, but I believe Dr. Tim's already talked to her. So we will just wait until Michael gets on. And Mark, I'm not sure that I've got your number. I think you're on the switchboard right now. If you would press 1, it'll throw you to the top of the phone numbers in the switchboard. There you are. Okay. So let me see if Michael's having any issues. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and turn your microphone on. Michael's dialing in. How are you doing, Mark?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice, Jeannie, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that you called in today. Michael and you are going to talk about the Beatitudes. And anybody who would like to have a copy of that, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and if you click on the worksheets, or the there again, like I said, the start here or the bullseye, the Beatitudes poster is in that list. So you can scroll down past the reality management wake-up sheets, and then there will be the Beatitudes listed in the other worksheets. And we've got every worksheet for every workshop listed there. So you can click on the Beatitudes, and it brings up the poster. You can print it off. You can read it from the website. We also sell them on a really nice parchment-type paper. But that is what the discussion is going to be about today, and we're excited about that. I don't know if Michael's having a challenge getting in here. Let me just double-check with him. All right.
All right. Well, you should be able to hear me, sweetie.
I can hear you now. And Mark is already with us. I've got his microphone on.
Oh, cool. Well, I had a bit of a challenge getting on. But we're here. Welcome, Mark. How do you be, sir?
Oh, very well. Thank you. Great to be here with you both.
Well, delighted to hear your voice. We haven't heard you on the show in a while.
It's good to be with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'd invited Mark to call into the show today. As a result of a still point breathing session that I did on Saturday. And in that still point breathing session, I shared a little bit, I think, on Monday about it, a really deep experience of energetic movement within my structure. And Mark has created, he's been doing this work for several years now, and he created a Beatitudes podcast sort of thing that he had shared with me, and I had been listening to it, and during my still point session, I just had, like, you know, of all the people I've worked with over the years, Mark, you just came in so powerfully, and I actually stepped out of my still point session, and at least the awareness of it, to send you a text right in the middle of it. The guidance was so strong to just share that with you. And so that's what led to us being on the show today. I had suggested that instead of us having just a private conversation, we have one that might be fruitful for the whole community to listen to, and of course to be in the archives for future access. So that's kind of why I'm here. How about you, Mark? Any thoughts to share?
I would say
before we
I would say that the Beatitudes have been a real center point for me over the last handful of years. And it's reflective, of course, in all of your work, Michael. But there is something about the conciseness of these Beatitudes that really spoke to me and helped me navigate back in 2011 to 2014 when I was navigating a mental health crisis. It was these core tools that really, you know, kind of gave me a roadmap, a guide of where I was headed. And it was to a good place, you know, I'm fully healthy today and everything. But there was this desire that birthed in me to do what I could to let people know, like, hey, these are active tools that we can bring into our lives that will help us, you know, really move into our very best life. So it's a huge passion of mine. I love sharing it. I love talking about it. And I am by no means in what I would consider an expert in it. I'm a practical applier of it. And so I know that, you know, there's a lot more that I can even learn. And one of the reasons we put out the Beatitudes practice was to start a conversation and to include people with perspectives, you know, to kind of expand that. Like, how do these really benefit our society and our families and us individually?
Right.
So that's what I have to say on it to start.
Cool. Sweet. Well, I'm going to just read my text. And I was in a totally altered state when you just came in so powerfully, and you know, the guidance was to share the thoughts with you. So what I had written to Mark was, I'm in a deep stills point session, was guided to give you a message about reforming your practice of the Beatitudes. And you know, as we said, Mark's really been working with them. The first one is not Rukkha as just the breath. There are several translators in the of the Aramaic language that translate this word Rukkha as the breath, and particularly as it relates to the Beatitudes. And in the Aramaic, it actually, the breath as one of the eternal forces from the Creator. And when we think about the Aramaic, where the Greeks tell us that God sent out his spirit, in Aramaic doesn't say this, it says God sent out his breath. And there are translators of the Aramaic that just translate this word as breath. And the offering what I was guided to offer to Mark was that it's Rukkha is not just the breath, but that's just one aspect of living in these eternal forces from the Creator. And that ultimately we must yield to all of the eternal forces from God, again called in Aramaic Rukkha. When we let go of the limited Greek idea, Yeshua would say it's all Greek to me, ideas brought to us by many interpreters who have not done the requisite inner work of his Aramaic words, just being about the breath, you can open literally to all of the eternal forces. These forces went undistorted, and in the process at that point, I was shown, I could actually literally feel and for those who've been in intensive, you know, we teach energy field work that we've taught for several decades for returning the core antenna structure of the body, which is the bony structure of the head, the spine, the pelvis, the arms, and the legs. The bones are literally, at least my take, an antenna, and that there are energetic inclinations that come through that antenna. But when carbon-based memory holds something related to that in some form of hostility or fear, greed, grief, pain, trauma, then what happens is that we distort that message, as it were, that inclination. So the rest of the text is for these forces, when undistorted and uninhibited, move, yes, even the bones of your skull, to incline your behavior toward Rukkha's ends rather than those of the past, stored in carbon-based memory and projected into perception. And so recognizing that there are many of these eternal forces, and the first beatitude, you know, it's traditionally interpreted by the Greeks as you whose home, or, pardon me, the traditional interpretation, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And you know, if we listen to Yeshua, there's a point where he talks about, you know, the main thing is to stay connected to this eternal force that he's working to connect us with. In fact, he even says, you know, you can deny me, but stay connected to that. And these eternal forces literally are energetic, the energetic impetus, as I understand it, towards certain behaviors. And the Greeks said we were supposed to be poor in that, which is kind of senseless in the context. But when you realize that the word meskini, which in Aramaic is home, that a fly speck on a piece of paper changes that word from home to poor. And one of the ways we know that, you know, there'll be a lot of Western scholars say, oh, no, it was all written down in Greek first, then it was translated into Aramaic. Well, when you look at that one word and you realize that it's kind of senseless to want to be poor in that which Yeshua said his whole purpose was to connect us to, then realize in the Aramaic, the primacy of the Aramaic, that his invitation was that rather than living in the perceptual constructs of our mind, rather than living in carbon-based memory projections, that literally our home, our, like the place where we gather the nourishment, the impetus, the inclination toward behavior, is from these literal eternal forces from the Creator. Or in Aramaic, it's also the word ruch is translated as the active forces from the Creator. And that what mainly came through in that session was just to bring forward the point of there are many of these forces. It's not just the breath. And while the breath is a big key that we want to keep the breath moving and make that a primary thing, it's also many other forces that come through this form that was designed to respond to those eternal forces. Does that fit? Does that make sense for you, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, a couple of notable things on that. And in terms of these active forces, my experience is that God's active forces do show up in a variety of different ways as we're being attuned, as you mentioned. And I know, at least from my lived experience, and you may recall this, but early on when I was, before I was introduced to all this, my body was being put into these yoga positions, and there'd be this like crack what I know in the Aramaic is called the Shem, or this energy force would move through me and this insight would come. And it was kind of strange and unusual and I would call it crazy at the time. You know, today I think it was just an adjustment that was happening after a lot of resistance. You know, I've been in a state of significant resistance. So there was this surrender. And so the surrender into and the allowance of that movement then matured over time. And I remember one day, one of the most unique experiences when I knew I was sane. So this is 2015, and I knew I was sane. And I was telling my then nine-year-old son, Henry, stories every night. And he had asked me, hey, would you tell me a story? Would you tell me a story? After 6 or 7 nights, I was kind of running dry on stories, but needless to say, he asked me again. And that particular night, this voice came through and said, tell him a story, allow the story to come. And so this is another experience of what I would call the active forces of God. So what occurred was I took that breath, and then my lips began to move. But I wasn't of that state that I had known me to be before moving them. It was like there was a force coming through, this loving force coming through, moving my lips, and then words started to come out. And I was almost listening to the story as it was coming through my lips. And so that is an example that I cherish, because it was a beginning, right? And at the end of that story, which was the best story that ever came through my lips up to that point, I turned to Henry and I said, "Hey, what'd you think?" And he gave me a thumbs up and he said, "Dad, that was really good." He said, "But it's just going to get better. I know you're just learning." Mm. From a 9-year-old.
Wow.
And so that's just another example. I mean, these active forces of God can come through us in a variety of ways. And I know in the audio, it's very heavily centric on the breath. And I went back and listened to it after you shared it. It's like, and you're right. You know, it needs to be expanded a bit. I had written about 80 or 90 pages of Beatitudes practice discussion guide. And in there, I break down the words. And certainly, for example, here on page 14, it says, you know, it talks about the English, Aramaic, Greek, and Hebrew, because I'm trying to navigate, you know, all of them. But the opening line here about this word is that it's translated as breath rather than spirit. They can mean breath, wind, what is empty or transitory, spirit, seat of emotion, disposition, life, like all these things. And it goes on to talk about this active force that I pulled from what you had shared many years ago with me, because I know that that's there, but I was thinking when I was putting together these Beatitudes practices that the name that I put on the breath is really kind of that center point from my action. You know, if I hold my breath, I resist these active forces coming through. And so I probably oversimplified it, and there's probably a way to mature that, you know, because it was years ago that I actually did those recordings, and enrich it so that it's more true to what my lived experience is as well.
Sweet. Well, when you talk about that sharing with your son, and my input would be from a previous experience, which I'll share, is that probably your son was right there attuned as you were, and it was probably a cooperative story that came through you. one of the most profound experiences of my life, and the first deep taste of being out of my mind and living in being was when I caught my daughter as she was being born at home. And when her head delivered into my hands, you know, they say a child can't focus their eyes for several days after birth. She was laser focused, looked in my eyes, and grinned at me. And that put me into a state that was, I mean, I literally had no mind. It was a Friday afternoon. At 3:40 in the afternoon, we realized my wife was in labor. And at 4:40, Krista Joy delivered into my hands. We had a classroom. We lived in Atlanta at the time. I had a classroom in my home. And it was a Friday evening, and at 7 o'clock, we were starting a class with people coming from several different parts of the country. And this was back before cell phones. She doesn't like to hear me say it, but 40. She'd been circling the earth for 40 years, but we didn't have cell phones, and there was one person in particular that was driving up from Miami, and I couldn't very well let him arrive at my door and say, "Too bad, we just had a baby, we're canceling, you can drive back to Miami." This was from Atlanta. So at 7 o'clock, newborn baby, 4:40 to 7 o'clock in my arms, walked and, you know, greeted people at the door coming in for the class. They're like, "No, she wasn't just born a couple hours ago." "No, I mean, yeah, no." Said, "Yeah, she was." And I went down to the classroom, and the only way I've been able to describe it and see if this fits for you when you started to tell the story, it was like my mind and my lips had been buttered. I could not think a thought. There was no thought in my mind. There was no activity or action of carbon-based memory. It was just direct transmission, to the point where I didn't know what I was going to say next, and I literally went and got a recorder. Somehow or other, in the last 40 years, those recordings disappeared, but I went and got a recorder, and I recorded that whole weekend. I did a 27-hour classroom class that weekend, and didn't think a thought the whole weekend. It put me me into such an altered state. And, you know, it, to me, it just ties in. And when you look at the promised result of this first beatitude, the Greeks tell us that you'll be in the kingdom of heaven. In Aramaic, Malkut Adishmea literally means you'll be in the community of love at what was called a heavenly estate, that you'll be connected fully to the presence of active love. And I noticed that, you know, as you were describing that opening for you, that's exactly where you were, was in that connected state, and that's exactly what this beatitude promises.
And it, as you know, and beautiful story, by the way, I love that. And as you know, it develops into something that I would say becomes something more consistent. One of the things that for me, because I was coming out of, I would say I was predominantly living in my carbon-based mind, you know, through my life in those middle years, and then had this break or this shift between 2011 and 15, that started in 2011. And then what began to occur is everything became reoriented in my life. And so after the example of sharing with Henry, I went to a business conference, and it would show up there. People would come up and were coming up to me in the conference about a dozen times saying, hey, can I talk to you? And we'd talk, and then I'd hear this voice like, hey, let them, you know, kind of experience this. And they were experiencing it. Of course, I was too, because I was in awe. And as you know, being in that state, it's just this awe state. So I was seeing the bounce from being in that state to being, you know, not as fully in that state. And kind of, so for, boy, probably 18 months or so, just kind of seeing the contrast more and more and more, and the, some of the other beatitudes, you know, can help, you know, bring light. You know, if we wanted to talk more about some of the other ones, either today or another time, but can bring more light to the dynamics that were occurring. But it was just a continuation of, I call it a maturing of, a surrendering into allowance, and that piece of making a home in, you know, as the beatitude begins. One of the things that has become more clear for me in my lived experience is what that means. What does that mean to make a home in, to, instead of poor in spirit, but to make a home in? And it's really to release all that is in the way of those active forces coming online. You know, and I use the word online with intention because I have had that experience. It's almost like a computer. You know, if you had a computer that was connected to, you know, the most pure source of content, and I know it's not, but from the internet standpoint, let's just say a computer connected to the internet and not connected. Well, if I'm connected to the internet, there's this source of lots of new insights and information and tools, et cetera, that aren't available on a computer that's not connected. Well, if we look at our own life and say, well, wow, there's this source of power and love and just, you know, clarity, et cetera, that is right there for ours to have. But if we judge it or we're holding on to a past belief that is in conflict, you know, and keeps us, you know, hidden or hides that active force, you know, from us, these beatitudes actually lift the veil. And they lift that veil and allow for this to come into our being in the way that is most effective for us. Because that's the beauty of this, you know, it's this gentle power that knows that, okay, Michael, your experience of you speaking for 27 hours and teaching without a thought, right, without a thought of where you're going to go next or what you might say next, just but being fully immersed in that presence of pure source coming through or being that. That was something that obviously has stuck with you for 40 years. And you could tell thousands more stories, I know. But that is an example of how you could receive the active forces of God coming through you in that moment. I think that one of my experiences is, as I've spoken with people who practice this, is it'll show up how you most need to experience it. And that is almost like a birthing of a desire for more. Like, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is powerful. What else? And there's a clearing that happens in those first three Beatitudes that get repeated to really open up to that, allow for the emotions to really move through us and be purified, you know, through Beatitude 2, and allow for this willingness to let things be different than the way that we had perceived it. You know, it's the love of truth challenge, right? But to let, in Beatitude 3, like, let go of attachment to how we think it is and allow for our life to really expand into what it is that, you know, we're being brought to. But the first three Beatitudes are really clearing, and that's why the fourth Beatitude is those who hunger for this. But there's a clearing that happens that really opens the space and clears out, you know, anything that might be an obstacle to you fully coming into the world, that second coming concept of coming fully in and allowing that Christ consciousness to fully be alive in our life.
Doing the work. You know, moving from, you know, alternating between being in those, that energy experience, to being in the constructs of our minds. You go back to Yeshua, he talks about, you know, don't judge by appearances. Every construct of carbon-based memory of the mind is simply a construct, and it isn't true except as a reflection of whatever's held in carbon-based memory. So certainly alternating between, I had another opening experience, actually a few years before that one with Krista, and it was just such a profound, as what I would call my ego state was trying to get my attention and come back here, hey, look at what I've got. And it was kind of represented by my mind at that time as this playful little puppy that's got something in its mouth that it wants to meet, you know, attract me to. And it's like, I'm going to give this state up for that. Thank you very much. And at that point, it was about a year, you know, issues in my life, relationship issues and that sort of things. It was about a year before any of those issues had, I kind of fell back into some of them and realized that was the next layer of work that I needed to do. But definitely stepping into healing crisis and processing through it, it's like, which voice are we going to listen to? And that physiologically our structure, you know, if I go back to my early electronics work, the shape of an antenna determines the frequency it receives. And I made reference in that note to you. It was really in the forefront at that point that literally the movement of the antenna, which the core of it, you know, you think about how complex the bones of the cranium are, the connection into the spine. And people think that the baby's soft spot, once it hardens, that the baby's head is fixed. But actually, we have a continuously self-adjusting antenna system. Your head, my head, your whole structure is in a state of continuous motion driven by these eternal forces. And when we've been physically or emotionally traumatized, if you remember the hands-on energy field work from the intensive, is designed to break loose physical or emotional trauma in the antenna that restricts its range of motion, that restricts the energy patterns that are designed to come in. And when somebody's been severely emotionally or physically traumatized, then the signals aren't available because literally the antenna is damaged. And in that still point session last Saturday, I mean, I could literally feel each bone in my head moving separately at a level that I've never, you know, I've always known it was there and worked with it as an antenna and developed how to adjust it to bring it back into full alignment. But it was just so deeply profound at that moment that these are where the eternal forces come in. These are where the energetic impetus come from, where it's received from source. And if I don't have things in carbon-based memory that distort it, I get that pure inclination, and it's always 100% right on target. if carbon-based memory mm-hmm. has resonance with whatever that particular piece of guidance is, then oftentimes we'll fall into carbon-based memories, fear or rage or grief or whatever it happens to be, greed, pain, trauma, we'll fall into that and do that instead. And that's when we're out of alignment with that guidance system. And, you know, it was actually the second time through, this goes back now, about the time my daughter was being born that I got involved in the Aramaic itself. And I can remember sitting and using the dictionary from the Enlightenment book and writing out the Beatitudes longhand. And I actually suggest that to people, that they take that book and use the dictionary and go back and get their own sense of it. But it was, you know, in my world, the training that my carbon-based memory had was, well, the Beatitudes are, you know, a nice philosophy from Yeshua. Well, what I got the second time, I was literally writing it longhand and going back and forth. And at that point, my partner in creating Laws of Living back at that time, Dan McDougald, and I'd go back and forth with him on definitions. And, I mean, we'd have an hour-long conversation around the simple refinement of one word. And it was the second time of writing it out longhand that it was like, oh, my God, this is a set of instructions for how to activate the underlying neural structures that the Creator put in us from the beginning. It's there. It's just been subverted. You know, if we look at that, the word tuvehun, it's a three-part word. And, you know, a tuv is this attitude of mind, and there's one that the Creator put in us from the beginning. It's designed to be the, you know, just like the operating system in a computer, when you use that analogy, it's designed to be the operating system for everything output from the mind. And this is how to bring that operating system back online. That's what this set of Beatitudes are from Yeshua. And yeah, I'm planning to go through the whole Beatitudes poster, which, by the way, anybody who's listening, if you want to access it, Jeannie has already put a link into the notes, I'm sure. And so if you go to whyagain.org, and there's a picture of a microphone on the homepage, scroll down, hit that, drill down, and you'll find the notes for today, and there'll be a link to the Beatitudes poster, which you can also print off just straight up from our website if you go to wagon.org. But yeah, it's a set of full instructions, and, you know, speaks about the work that's going to need to be done.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wanted to build on that. I love the work that you and Dan and your teams have done over the years to bring this out. And I've not just me, but so many have been the beneficiaries of that. And as I was exploring and navigating, you know, okay, why are these things happening in my healing process? Because I was, of course, I knew the material from the Why Again workshop and had been doing, you know, worksheets, et cetera. And around the time when this was really coming online for me to investigate, you had suggested the same thing, like, hey, write it out, the definitions, and it was very helpful.
Right.
But I also had
that's a powerful exercise, isn't it?
It's incredibly powerful because it does add depth, you know, and meaning. And one of your other students, Dale Allen Hoffman, did a lot with the Beatitudes in his work. You know, I looked into it, and he's done a remarkable job. And then JM, who wrote Way of Mastery, has done a remarkable job.
Right.
And so I had the benefit of, and I know, I think it's Douglas Klotz or something, had done stuff. I didn't study his as much, but
Neil,
I was really
yeah.
drawn to look at JM, Dale, and your interpretations, kind of bring them together for me to see, like, okay, why are they using this a little bit differently, or is it the same? And I'll tell you what, once I went through that and got to a clear point, that's what launched the Attitudes practice. And once I then did the audio part, I started writing this book to kind of get to a deeper understanding. And it was in the writing of the book where I was looking at the Greek and the Aramaic and the English and the Hebrew and stuff, and I realized, you know, it's not that it's wrong, right? It's not, you know, because I, for a long time, by the way, I used to think, oh my gosh, you know, who is the idiot who wrote down blessed are the poor in spirit, you know, for there's the kingdom of heaven, because it seemed like Greek to me. But one of the things that you said is like, hey, they got one letter wrong, right? So instead of home, they used poor. But when we look at the combination and the true understanding upon reflection, it's like, okay, I could see it in some of these other translations, but it wasn't a complete picture. It was almost like what you pointed out with me with the whole emphasis on the breath rather than the active forces. You know, it was not that it was wrong. It was just incomplete in terms of the full breadth of what could be expressed. And that's how I started to look back and like, okay, it's not that these guys were translators were the idiots that I made them out to be. They were just going through the lens of the perceptual worldview that they had at the time when they were doing the translation, and they either missed it, assuming they didn't do it intentionally, that they missed it from the completion of it, the fullness of it, the breadth of it. And what a great time in our history to have more clarity on these Beatitudes practice become available to every person on the planet, because it's needed now more than ever. You know, it's always been there, right? It's been right in front of our face, but at least for me, I don't know about you, but prior to really tapping into this Aramaic view, it was very tough to gain any kind of value out of these Beatitudes. As from a humility standpoint, I know a lot of people have studied this and have put a lot of work out there, a lot of pastors and priests and, you know, people, you know, have studied scripture, and they've had their own interpretations of these, but I've never heard it as a practice prior to, you know, this work.
Oh, too. And it's not, you know, you go back again to Yeshua, and he says, first of all, in order for his work to be useful to you, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. For he who having eyes does not see, and he who having ears does not perceive. In other words, our perceptual constructs can't reflect anything other than what's in them. And so if we don't have the brain cells for what that reflect the brain cells he was working from, then, you know, we can't even tap into what was being said. There's an interesting line. There's a movie out there. It's kind of a violent movie, not very kind, but it's called The Accountant. And it's pretty powerful. But there's a song at the end of it, the thing that impressed me when I heard this. It was like, wow. And the song, the key line in the song at the end of that movie was, you can't read a book that you haven't written. And that's why I suggest to virtually everybody who's interested in Beatitudes that they write it out, because you've got to write it. You've got to develop the brain cells individually before carbon-based memory can serve it up as a perceptual construct. Otherwise, the perceptual construct is going to be off base. And then if you look at, you know, the poster, I assume you've got a copy of the Beatitudes poster, and that at the bottom of it we talk about the first, the greatest and second commandment, and that the instruction there was one of, you've got to have this gateway open in the frontal lobes of the brain that opens a pathway for human life to come into our human form, Rachma.
Well, and I think that, I apologize if I had just interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, go for it.
Well, you just hit on something that's really, really key. So when someone starts to open up to this practice, there's, you may have experiences that are unique. You know, I mean, listen to Michael's story and my story of my son and Michael's, you know, teaching after the birth of his daughter. And again, those are just a couple of thousands of stories we both could tell, but there's a surrender into letting things come forth through you in the adjustment process. I remember one time I was sitting in my bed, and my hand moved off of my lap and grabbed a particular book, and I was watching it happen. And it's like, huh, that's interesting. Now, this was after I'd already had the yoga experiences where my body was put in the yoga position, so it wasn't that unusual for me. But for most people listening, it's probably kind of unusual. So, but that was part of what needed to happen in that particular moment. And it was just a witnessing. And I often have shared with people that imagine that, and I use my fist just as a symbol, imagine that the fist represents the core of our being for a moment. And that in that core of our being is that pure essence of that life force, you know, that is keeping us alive. That's animating us, if you will. And then we create these walls and blocks and layers, as everybody listening knows from this work, that we kind of create this outer mask. Well, the outer mask might have a perceptual idea that it is something that's real. And so in the process of going through the Beatitudes, there's a dissolution or dismantling of the outer mask, and that can feel kind of unusual, changing from scary perhaps to holy, if you will, would be to say, hey, it's okay for the outer mask to fall away. It's okay for it to integrate back into the full expression of the life force that's in me. Well, if I'm keeping alive that mask, even if it's unconscious, right? If I'm keeping alive that mask, then that inner force, that life force, is going to find a way if we're willing. And one of the things that we hear in the Beatitudes is it does bring online. It's a practice that activates these life forces coming online. And then there's so much more that comes with the other. We break it down into 10 Beatitudes. And if we can look at the idea that, okay, if that life force was, in my experience with the hand moving, was saying, okay, and it was right after a prayer, by the way. I said, hey, God, if there's a way to heal this, show me the way. I'm yours. I do whatever you want, kind of thing. And it was in that moment, seconds later, that my hand moved and grabbed that book. And it's like, okay, that is the life force. That's the life force saying, okay, you want me to come and be with you and be fully alive, then there's some things that you're going to need to let go of. And for me, I had to let go that the world is the way it is. That was just my path. I perceived that, well, it's this way. This is the way it's always been. This is the way the world is. And so to let go of a perception that the world is, unified already or perfect as it is or whatever it is, not perfect in the way that a spiritual person might say, but I had an idea that, something had to be, literally in my mind perfect, right? And that all collapsed. But it took time, because it took a little bit of trust, for example, allowing my hand to move. I could have resisted it. I had the ability to say, I'm going to override this. This is freaking me out. I don't like that my hand's moving apparently on its own, or that in the story of telling the story with Henry, that my lips apparently were moving and I apparently wasn't moving them, but I was. It was just the expression of the purity of that life force that was coming through that was inviting me to say, oh, wait, maybe it's different than I'm perceiving. Maybe the way I've been holding on to my life isn't accurate. And do I want to keep this mask alive or allow it to truly, die and have that source of life, rebirth it into something constructive? And it's been a journey. It's been a whole lot of fun. And these Beatitudes, if you are really interested in really studying and really practicing, they will change your life in a radical way. And Jesus was radical, right? I mean, it was a radical idea at the time. And unfortunately,
well, I think that's why they turned it into Greek philosophy. Was, wait a minute, we got to cover this up. We got to get rid of this impetus. towards something other than what the king wants.
It's unfortunately true.
Now, when he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die, he's talking about that mask self, that non-being self, and making room for a total rebuild. And that's going to mean physiology as well. You know, in the East, they call it Kundalini, and they have this theory that it was an energy that resided in the base of the spine that came up the spine and, you know, did what it did. But in fact, what my take on what Kundalini is, I think they've misinterpreted in the East. You know, wherever there are dis-ease energies, energies that are out of alignment with the perfect flow through this antenna structure called a body-mind unit, wherever it's out of alignment, there are blocks. And when we start to move toward alignment, then the blocks are going to start to move and be undone, and the energy will appear wherever the blocks are. So I've seen Kundalini energy appear in the base of the skull, in a foot, in a hand, in an arm. Actually, anywhere that there's injury or dis-ease, come into alignment, then a full complement of energy comes through, and it literally starts to punch through the disease processes, and it can be pretty intense. In the East, there's a whole lot of macho and a whole lot of sexual impropriety, and so where did they think the Kundalini came from was the base of the spine, because it was cracking through, breaking through sexual issues, held sexual energy that people had. But the truth is, it can show up anywhere, and it will literally realign. When I hear you talking about going into that posture, your structure was saying, okay, so this is what we need to do to open that part of the antenna so that a full flow of energy will come through. And it's Rachma, you know, the first commandment was, and commandment in law, when they said, you know, what's most important in the law, the Greek culture has us believing that law is the rule of a superior. And it's not the rule of a superior. Law is simply the way it works. So when they said to him, you know, the question more accurately would have probably been, what do we have to do to function as humans? And he says, first order business. You've got to have Rachma, that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, that is the gateway for love to enter human life and keep your perceptual system on track with love. When you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self, this is how we are restored to and maintain our human lives, which is the presence of love. And then the 10 most important words, if you look at, you know, if you've got the Beatitudes poster there, the bottom line in that poster has the 10 most important words that he and anybody on earth have ever spoken. And what it says is, upon these two commandments hang the law and its prophets. So when you talked about, you know, people who interpreted through the Greek and blah, 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 well, it was sort of there, but it wasn't really there. What was going on? What he was saying is that in order to pick that book up that was called Scripture and understand it properly, you've got to have this connection to the eternal forces, and you need to be aligned with that. Otherwise, your carbon-based memory is going to interpret whatever's in carbon-based memory. And if King wants you to believe that, well, what you're supposed to do is, yeah, you're supposed to be loving, but then when I tell you to go to war, you're supposed to go kill people. If that's what's been programmed in carbon-based memory, then people will take the scriptures and they'll read them in a way that justifies war and killing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's in carbon-based memory. But this, you know, when you realize that being in alignment with the active presence of love, then you pick that book up, then you can come from the brain cells that Yeshua had when he spoke those thoughts. And of course, the Aramaic takes you closer and closer and closer to where you can more easily open to align with that understanding.
Well,
but the whole thing hangs on. I was just going to say, the whole thing hangs on, literally, is the active presence of love the predominant resonant energy that's alive in you. If it is, then you're going to be on track with what's in that book, and if not, you're going to project into it whatever's in carbon-based memory.
And I think that one of the things that you just highlighted was with the evidence that people have experienced in their physical life, one of the things that's in this carbon-based memory is the idea of suicide. And one of the things that I've experienced with dealing with people who have suicidal thoughts is that what they are, and I had suicidal thoughts and I had murderous thoughts back in 2011 when I was going through my whole mental health stuff. And as I really surrendered into this, began to appear as this recognition that what I wanted to die of was this false idea of who I was. And it came up in the way of suicide. And then once I believed, you know, which was also just kind of more of a false idea coming from an over-enthusiastic imagination, I wanted to believe that I was awakened fully at the time. And so I wanted other people to. And the idea that purposely, I guess, put into my head for maybe this conversation or maybe some of the other things I'll be teaching, but was this idea that I had to kill. And the idea of kill would cycle around. And someone who's experienced bipolar, which I did, and mania, those thoughts, they don't get softer. They get tighter and tighter and tighter unless they're interrupted. Goal canceling and a number of the practices.
Forgiveness is definitely key.
support interrupting the cycle. And so one day, as I did a goal cancel on, well, I cancel my goal to kill, right? And this is all in my head. I'm processing it in that moment. And I finally got to a place I said, well, what does kill mean? And this whole storyline came out. It's like I had a perception that to kill would be to allow other people to have their first death and awaken. I mean, what a screwy idea, right? But that's how the carbon-based mind can misappropriate dialogue, readings, even from scripture, like you said, because I got that from scripture. You know, you won't taste the second death kind of thing. And the idea that started to surface for me over time is, oh my gosh, these concepts of murder and suicide, they're off, of course, and we can help get someone back online with these tools to support people in recognizing just consciously, like, oh, wait, what if it was true that you didn't actually want to leave the planet, but you actually just wanted to let go of the life that you have been living and have the full expression of that life force that wants to fully live come forward. And if someone could cognitively understand that that might be what it is, then we may have a lot more people saying, oh, sign me up. Like, let me do some more worksheets. You know, let me do some more mind shifters, you know, whatever it is to help people shed those parts that aren't living in the purity of who we truly are.
So I'm thinking it's probably, Jeannie would probably have a better, she distinguishes one year from another better than I do, but about 15 years ago, we actually did a family trip to Hawaii, and we had planned it as part of doing some workshops there, and we spoke at Unity in Diamond Head, and we did a week of workshops, and we were going to be on the islands for couple more weeks, and the Unity minister contacted us and said, you know, you guys are going to be here for a while longer. Will you come back and do another series? We just really got a lot of accolades out of that week of workshops, and we don't usually do that, go back to a place, you know, but 6 weeks later, it was actually kind of tough because we had to stay an extra 2 weeks in Hawaii in February. It was difficult, but we did it. But anyway, we went back and did another week-long series. There's Sunday service, another week-long series. And we had three people that came to us and said, when I was here 6 weeks ago and did that Sunday forgiveness workshop, we had three people who said they were planning their suicide and that they were so delighted that they got the understanding and had no interest in suicide anymore, had challenges, had some deep work to do, but were finished with suicide. So it's powerful when people get a hold of the tools and start to shift that carbon-based memory. And to me, just having the information, the knowledge that hostility and fear always is an indicator. It's like the warning signal from the creator. The carbon-based memory is offline, off base, and needs correction, needs healing. And that, you know, to listen to anything it has to say is just a gross error, and we need to get back in alignment with human life, the restoration of love, so that whatever is in carbon-based memory, if it's so far off base as to be that destructive, that energy can be transmuted or forgiven, can be removed from the structure. And going back through, I mean, we're talking about dealing with and healing generations and generations and generations of those kinds of dynamics. You know, we did an online in codependence to interdependence communication practicum back a few months ago, and this young lady who's probably out there listening on the show right now, Magda, in that intensive, she was dealing with some heart issues and was actually going to the hospital, and her assignment was to ask her generations about issues of the heart. And when she shared in the intensive what happened between her and her deceased grandfather as a result of a mind shifter around the issues of the heart and the generations, and then she called in the show. I'll send you a link to that show. It's about 20 or 25 minutes, but such a profound, and I mean, second time I heard it was when she called into the show and shared it, but left me in tears as she dealt with a grandfather who had come over from Europe and was, you know, ostensibly coming to the land of milk and honey and streets paved in gold, and found himself having to dig a hole in the ground for his family to have a hovel to live in, and the terror of, you know, were they going to have enough to eat the crops, were they going to come in, and his abuse of his wife and his children. And just, I mean, it's such a powerful piece of work to open and be able to go to those generational patterns and heal them. Just, you know, monumental. And maybe, Jeannie,
yeah,
you could put a link to that in the notes, and I'll go ahead, Mark, and send you a link to that. You'll probably find it interesting. It's a powerful sharing.
Please, please. I know we're getting close to the end. I was going to share one more story, but I...
Go for it.
So this is a very personal story, but along those lines of kind of that suicidal ideation, because I know in the world today, I mean, the numbers are off the charts in terms of people who are struggling with mental health kind of challenges, anxiety, depression, et cetera. I mean, I think it's underreported, but the numbers are four times what they were just a couple of years ago. And a couple studies I've seen with hundreds of thousands of people have highlighted that about 80% of people are dealing with this. And suicidal ideation can come from a number of different areas. And I wanted to share this quick story where one of my children actually had been just angry and spouting off that he wanted to kill himself. And he said it enough that my wife, you know, after work one day, she's like, hey, you need to talk. He keeps saying this. So I sat him down and I said, well, what's going on? Mom says you're saying these things that you want to kill yourself. And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. And mind you, I'd been well-trained in all this work, so I was able to stay present and cancel all my goals for him to live and all that stuff. So I was really there with him. And I said, well, what do you think is going to happen, you know, if you do that? And he said, well, everything will be better, was his response. I said, well, what do you mean? And he described his fantasy of what his life would be like after. And I said, okay, what if you're wrong? And he looked at me, and because he hadn't considered that he might be wrong, because his perception from everything he had learned, the way he took in the information, was that this other place was going to be so much better than this place. And I said, yeah, what if you're wrong? What if you do that, the same work that you could do here in a body, you know, and actually get to the other side of it and live a full life, what if you still have to do that work wherever you go? What if that work doesn't go away? And
Mark,
the conversation
continued.
The phone's
going to cut us off. The phone's going to cut us off, or the show, but maybe we can pick this up tomorrow if you've got the space.
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. Blessings to everybody. Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.